You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Bangladeshi British writer Zia Haider Rahman worked as an investment banker at Goldman Sachs and as an international human rights lawyer before he sat down to write his first novel, In the Light of What We Know. It's set against the backdrop of the global economic crisis and the war in Afghanistan, and begins when an investment banker who's fallen on hard times gets a surprise visit from a brilliant and eccentric long-lost friend. The New York Times has called the novel strange and brilliant. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and I'm very pleased that it brings Zia Haider Rahman to our show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard.
Now, the words novelist and investment banker don't usually go hand in hand. Had you wanted to write fiction all along?
You know, I had, yeah. It's always been there. Not so much wanting to be a published author, but wanting to write, and that's easily satisfied simply by writing. But the idea of stepping out and writing something for publication, that had not really hit my radar.
And then people usually start off with short stories. You have here a book, 500 pages, rather ambitious for a first-time novelist. So I'm assuming you've been thinking about some of the things that are in this book for a long time.
I have. You know, when people ask how long did it take to write this book, I can't imagine any author saying anything other than the whole of my life until now. So many of the themes and ideas in this novel, the images, they've been there for goodness knows how long.
And, of course, it's obvious that you've drawn upon your life. The novel's protagonist, Zafar, was born in rural Bangladesh, educated at Oxford before he began his career as a trader and then as a lawyer. I saw that in an interview. You said that you're 67.5% similar to Zafar. Very specific. I was ready to round it out to 68%.
Yeah. Well, I was being a little facetious, Leonard. Of course, there are similarities between me and Zafar. We were, as you say, both born in Bangladesh, grew up in poverty and moved to the UK, and lived in the projects and went to Oxford, banking and on Wall Street and human rights lawyering. But I think it's always useful to remember that everyone writes what they know. Philip Roth, I like saying that Philip Roth didn't write about Turks in modern Istanbul, and Orhan Pamuk didn't write about a Trinidadian settling in England, and V.S. Naipaul didn't write about Jews in Newark, New Jersey in the 1950s. We write what we know.
Sappho describes the story as being about the breaking of nations, war in the 21st century, marriage into the English aristocracy, and the mathematics of love. Is that a description you would give the book, or is that what Zafar thinks?
That's a very good question. I think that's what the narrator would like to have you think. I mean, one of the things we have to remember throughout this novel is that it is the narrator telling you his understanding of Zafar's story, but also his own story. He's telling you that. So everything is intermediated by this slightly shifty and slightly unreliable narrator. But yes, it is a grand story in some sense.
Yeah. And he's unnamed.
Yeah.
He's almost like a Jamesian narrator who's a character and at the same time really just presenting himself as somebody who's telling you this other story.
Yes, exactly. And that I think, you know, should put everybody on alert. There's something going on here. The novel explores this friendship between two people of very different. I don't want to take the wind out of your sails. You probably have another question on this, but yeah,
it's okay. Take the wind out of me.
Friendship between two people across this wide class gulf, and I think something to sort of that is brought out is the difficulty that these two have of understanding each other.
Well, the narrator is Pakistani-American. Yeah. Zafar is Bangladeshi-British. They have different relationships with their adoptive countries.
Yes, they do. And the narrator is so much more comfortable in his skin. On the surface, so much more comfortable in his skin, in his adopted identity. Whereas Zafar has all sorts of difficulties with this. And they also have it's interesting. They're both South Asian, in some sense, on their face.
They're both Muslim.
But
both study mathematics
exactly,
at Oxford.
Yeah, and all these similarities. And yet, despite all these similarities, there's an intentionality, obviously, in that. What emerges is the overwhelming force of the difference of class on their identities. And that's why it was important to keep them similar in.
And you use the word class in the book, and I wondered whether class and caste are all that different, because even though caste is really something that grows out of Hindu culture, it is there in Pakistan, and I assume it's also there in Bangladesh.
Well, it's a regrettable fact that hierarchies of one kind or another seem to be, that we human beings seem to have an appetite for them, and that they abound in cultures across the world. Some say, actually, by the way, that one of the reasons Britain was so successful in dominating South Asia for over 200 years is that there was already a class system there, or a caste system there.
And they knew how to play it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think there are definitely similarities. Yeah.
Well, another similarity is that they're both South Asian men in a post 9/11 world.
Yes, and that's a fascinating experience for me, actually, personally, as well. It's there's a point in the novel when Zafar makes the observation that for him, one thing he noticed after 9/11, and rather controversially, and I suspect there are others who will recognize this, is that he suddenly felt he was sexualized, that he was no longer invisible, and that women looked at him, or, you know, where he was being ignored formally, he was now being recognized.
But also people at airports.
Yes. I've had that experience too. I've been pulled over. Actually, until the last two occasions, I was pulled over for at least a couple of hours, 2 or 3 hours. And I have not so much mixed feelings. I actually don't mind, because I read a lot. And for me, it's just another period of time in which to read.
But it doesn't bother you that I just go right through, sailing right through?
I'm not prone to comparing myself with others, so maybe that's why. But, I take issue with, I think some of these things are absurd, there's no doubt, and they do more harm than good. They look effective, but they're not. But that's another discussion. Yeah.
My guest is Zia Haider Rahman, his novel In the Light of What We Know. Zafar explains that childhood poverty looms over one's whole life. Growing up poor primes every emotion for a certain key. So even if you become a big success, that's always there?
Well, even the word even doesn't make it into my thinking. It's sort of somehow irrelevant. It's not even relevant. So that, you know, no, I think maybe this is not the experience for everyone, but certainly for me, nothing I've done seems to encroach on it, there's a taste in my mouth that's always going to be there. And, you know, when I hear the word hungry, in most of the time it's used metaphorically. We're hungry for knowledge, hungry for this. I actually know a literal meaning, and that I think changes your perspective on so many things.
So when you were a trader at Goldman Sachs,
and
you were working with people who had grown up under very different circumstances, was there a certain resentment or a sense that beyond the obvious differences, there were the differences of how you'd come to be there?
No, no, there wasn't resentment, certainly not. We all walk the same dark road, you know. I think the root of compassion is seeing that, and that compassion needs to be extended to those apparently better off than ourselves. No, my experience was looking out the window and seeing the Statue of Liberty and just marveling at this extraordinary fact and the extraordinary randomness of human life.
Zafar visits the narrator in September 2008, which, of course, is a significant moment in the financial world.
Yes.
And you obviously chose that because of its significance, right at the beginning of the global financial crisis. A lot has been written about that time. What were you trying to bring to the conversation that might be different?
Well, I think that one thing that's often lost is the personal dimension of a life in finance. You know, we think of bankers as... in fact, when you introduced this piece, you talked about... I think you said unfortunate banker or something like that. And, of course, there's a... It's hard to imagine.
I said he'd just fallen on hard times.
Fallen on hard times, exactly. So it's very hard to imagine how a banker could fall on hard times, and in some strict sense they don't. But I think that, again, it goes back to this business about compassion for all, and I think that one of the things I wanted to explore was the experience of the banker and the scapegoat. And he's not perfect by any means.
But what's happening in the narrator's career at this point?
Well, he lost, he made a lot of money out of mortgage-backed securities, which is, you know, the stuff that really caused problems in, beginning before 2008, but came to a head in 2008 onwards. So he made his money in that and made his bank's money in that. But now he, you know, that, all of that is unraveling.
Salman Rushdie has written that he thinks that English writing was going kind of flat for a while, and then came all of these people from the former British colonies who spoke other languages first and have enriched English. I'm assuming you spoke Bengali as your first language.
Yeah, that was my first language, and even now I still dream about certain things, particularly family, in Bengali. No, I think Salman Rushdie is right.
What do you speak in at home?
Oh, Sylheti, which is a dialect of Bengali. So strictly speaking, it's not Bengali, but, you know.
But you write in English.
I write in English. I think in English. I dream in English. But if I think of my mother, then I dream in Bengali.
Each chapter begins with at least one epigraph, sometimes as many as three or four.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to include so many quotations from other writers? And we're talking about a wide range, not just Asians, but Ben Bernanke, Leo Tolstoy.
Yeah. Well, these one of the things that becomes apparent in the course of the novel is that these quotations are taken from Zaffa's notebooks by the narrator, and they work to point both the reader and help the narrator try to create a map of things. You know, the epigraphs are not... They don't have the same function as epigraphs usually in novels because, as I say, they're actually put there by the narrator. So the other thing, the small thing, is that actually the epigraphs are where a big disclosure is made later on.
Also an important aspect is Gödel's incompleteness theorem. How does it apply to what you're writing about in this novel?
Well, Zaffa is obsessed with this theorem, and it is an extraordinary theorem. Someone once said that the three greatest discoveries of the 20th century were Einstein's theory of relativity, the Crick and Watson's discovery of DNA, and Gödel's incompleteness theorem. But the reason we don't hear so much about the last one is that it only happens to deal with the nature of truth, and who cares about that? So he's obsessed with this. It's an extraordinary theorem, and it's one of these rare theorems that you can actually state in plain language, and it says there are things that are true that cannot be proven to be true.
We don't have much time, but I do want to point out that this is a global novel. It takes place in New York, also in Islamabad and Kabul.
Yeah.
Zaffa ends up in Afghanistan, so you were talking about that aspect of our current history, as well as the financial crisis.
Yeah.
Is that because you left finance to become an international human rights lawyer?
Is that because of that?
One thing must have led you to go to something quite different.
Yeah, no, it certainly correlates with my own experiences and the things I'm drawing on. I did work in human rights law and in that part of the world.
Now, your home country, Bangladesh, has been a very troubled country.
Yeah.
Can you do anything to help set it straight?
Can I do anything? Yes, I did the afternoon one.
Well, why do you think it's had such a troubled history, considering the fact that it started off with so much promise and hope?
So much promise. No, you're quite right. It did start off with an extraordinary promise. This is one of those overdetermined problems. There are just so many possible causes, and one can't really sift the operative causes from the ones that are redundant. But, you know, in 1971, an entire generation of its thinkers were slaughtered in a matter of weeks. And And that has a has had a devastating consequence on the country. But it also suffers from many of the ills of young, new, poor democracies.
Zia Haider Rahman's novel, In the Light of What We Know, is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. It's been a great pleasure talking with you.
Thank you very much, Leonard.